All right, before we start today's episode, a lot of thank yous we have to give out for Suburbs Fest, people who helped out. And did you have fun, Patrick?
I had a great time, Jim. I'm still recovering, and it was an amazing 3 days of peace, love, and music.
Wonderful time. And intern Sam is here. Sam Lisker. Yes. Hey, Sam.
Hello.
Thanks for all your help with the video and your brother Josh. And you had a good time as well?
Oh, we did. And Josh had a lot of fun as well. It was my first video gig since the pandemic, and it was everything I hoped and dreamt it could have been. And I got to meet everybody, which was awesome.
That was great.
It was so
great.
Amazing to meet everybody and to see others, you know, meeting the other listeners. It was a wonderful, you know, familial event.
It really was a great experience.
Yes. So anyway, some quick thank yous here. First, I want to thank Wingtip Sloat.
Of course.
Yes, of course.
Patrick, Andy, and the Bish for playing on Saturday, and Apollo 66, Travis, Alex, and Sean. Mm-hmm. Dot Dash, that's Terry and Danny and Hunter. And then Frank Muffin, of course, came all the way from Indiana and played two shows at Suburbs Fest. And that would be, of course, Hans and Brittany and Jerome and Joe.
That's right.
So thanks very much.
And a special shout out to Travis for running the sound on Saturday night. So he not only played a set, but he was in charge of all that monitoring and all those cables and all that. He did a great
job. Absolutely. Did a wonderful job. Thank you, Travis, for that. Also, a special shout out here to Eric Didrikson and Andy Dubuque again and Sean from Apollo 66 for helping me out with the hash pipe.
That was awesome.
That was so killer.
I want to thank Frank at Settle Down Easy and also Sean, who was the MC for the first night. Gordon at Ned Devine's, thanks for letting us use your place. And Bob and Eric, who ran sound at Ned Devine's.
Great job.
The fine people at the American Legion Post 41 for night two. Karen at Marriott Fairview Park. She hooked us up with the block of discount rooms for people, and also the conference room that we use Saturday for recording, and kept the hotel bar open on Friday, which was great for the after party on Friday.
Yep.
And then also David Leedy, I want to mention him because he couldn't make it to the festival, but he sent a $100 gift card to Settle Down Easy, which we then used to buy a bunch of people drinks. So thank you, David, for that.
So nice.
I went in at one point and they told me the tab was up to $99.99 and I wasn't going to be able to get it.
Thanks, David.
Thanks to Paul Trapp. He sent us each like $20 bills. He said buy people drinks. Yeah. And I used that money to help out Frank Muffin with the donations, you know, for the travel and stuff like that. So
nice.
Got that. I want to thank Eric Didrikson and Kirk Gallagher for giving me records.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you to both those guys for the wonderful records.
You mentioned Keith Jacobson did something special too, right?
Yeah, he borrowed a record, I believe, out of Tim Hoffman's collection, a Genesis album, and then gave it to me. And then I said, thanks. And he said, well, it's not really yours. I just borrowed it from Tim Hoffman to make a joke.
What was the CD seller thing?
Oh, he did. Keith, thank you so much. He gave me the frequent buyer card that he had established. Every time you spend a certain amount at CD seller, you get a check mark toward a discount of 10. And he gave me his card. I was able to use that. So thank you,
Keith. Nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wonderful. So he really ran that thing up.
He did.
Just like
it was beautiful.
Day.
Yeah. He might have exceeded the limit on his Visa.
Let's see. What else here? I want to thank Barrett Reese and Mike Coley for taking great photos.
Oh, amazing.
They came
stuff.
With their like professional cameras and really took some great photos. You guys can see those on the social medias.
They're awesome.
Barrett's black and white photos. Incredible. Mike's colors are amazing, too.
Noir out of rock and roll.
It really looks
amazing.
Best way to say it.
And Mike Coley wrote a nice article
at
315 Music. Mm-hmm. And go check that out. Really nice.
Absolutely.
And then, personally, I also want to thank Mike Wagner and Keith Jacobson for helping me out with the two songs that I performed on Friday night. So anything else? Anybody I missed?
No, just to echo all that. And thanks to everyone who came and hope you had a great time and enjoyed all the experiences.
Also the people who brought beer. I can't remember who all it was. I know Trip Bacon. Who was it? Kevin Bartlett.
Kevin Bartlett,
Mike Coley again, and I'm sure others brought beer from places, and we had like a big beer swap, and that was fun.
It's great when a beer just appears in your hand, and you're not
it's
really
magic.
Sure where it came from. Yeah, it's a good thing.
So, all right, thanks to all those people, and now let's get on with today's episode, recorded at Suburbs Fest.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, what are words for?
What do you mean, Jim?
I mean, no one listens anymore.
Oh, you're talking about our podcast.
All right, Patrick, we are at Suburbs Fest.
Yeah, we are.
We're in a hotel conference room that is one of the nicest places we've ever recorded, right?
The second most luxurious, we determined, yeah.
Kirk Gallagher's at the head of the table down here, and he is taking it upon himself to hire and fire people during the course of this.
It's like session. Dad, you sit as far away from him at Christmas dinner as you possibly can so he doesn't pick on you.
Yeah. So, and somebody poured me a nice beer. I think it was Evan gave me the beer, right? The Copper City beer? No. Was it Mike? Must be Mike. Mike Coley, the Copper City beer.
Yes, so anyway. Copper City representative.
Okay. And so I'm drinking that. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We figured since we were all gathered, we have people from 15 different states represented at Suburbs Fest.
That's
all
impressive.
Right? And last night we had our big night one at Settle Down Easy Brewing, and many people played songs.
And we all had an amazing sing-along at the end there. There was a tear brought to the eye.
Unbelievable.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, and if you're tuning in for the first time, because maybe you heard about this Suburbs Fest thing and you wanted, you know,
could have been there.
The global news, how that works, you know, things go viral and so on. Anyway, the show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Okay. And so what we're going to do here today, since we have everybody here for Suburbs Fest, was we thought we'd just do a series of short episodes where everybody gets a chance to be on mic, talk with us in person. Some of these people you may have heard on the show in different ways. Some may be new to you, but they get to come on. 10 minutes, I have a timer here. Mm-hmm. They can talk about whatever topic they want, and you know we can just hang out, right?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, if they want to fill the whole 10 minutes, just one,
one monologue?
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Or we have the bag of questions if they need some prompting, all right? So I haven't set the timer yet, but I'm going to now. 10 minutes. Our first guest is BJ Bonin. Hello, BJ.
Hello, Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, man. Demolition Means Progress is your band.
That's correct.
Yeah, and we are very happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you played a couple songs last night. It went very well.
Yeah, I thought so, too. The whole night went well.
Many people were talking about your guitar.
Yes.
It was very cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
I have to admit. So, for those who are trying to see it through the podcast, it is a
I always do this.
Cherry red Epiphone Riviera 12-string. So it looks like a Gibson 335 and with 12 strings. So,
very cool. Yeah.
It's,
well, BJ's very cool.
Yes.
Well, so some people would argue with that, including myself.
So BJ, what do you want to talk about?
What I've got here for a short topic is albums that you heard the first time and hated that you then came around to love.
Very interesting.
And I'm not talking about, you know, things that as you get older, you learn to appreciate. I'm talking about you absolutely despise that record. And if you bought it, you wondered, you know, why you wasted your money.
Right. Right.
Right. And then later on, it's like, this is brilliant. Hmm. So you guys have any examples that come to mind, or should I lead it off?
You lead it off.
Because I've got two.
Okay.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. First one is more recent. Archers of Loaf, All the Nation's Airports.
Okay.
When I first heard that, I wasted my money, and I was totally disappointed. And now I come back and find that that is my, by far, favorite Archers of Loaf record. And it's utterly brilliant, but it definitely is different than the previous two or three. I forget if it's their third or fourth.
Why did you hate it so much initially?
It was different.
Okay.
And it had this really weird, you know, Chumming the Ocean song on it that just didn't seem to fit, that it's all like really reverbed out piano, and it's kind of like this really sad ballady type of thing, and you're used to the, you know, the gravelly voice screaming Archers of Loaf songs, but it just didn't fit. And now come back to find that that record is utterly brilliant.
Yeah.
Second example, this one's older, going back to the early 80s when I was a kid, hearing Missing Persons on the radio. Mm. That was all over the place back in the day, Spring Session M being their debut record and their best record. I absolutely hated that, and I would turn the channel or turn the radio off whenever I heard that. And then within I'd say 4 or 5 years, I went out and bought the record because I came to appreciate it more. And I now realize that even though the production is pretty dated, it is a brilliant piece of work. And if you guys haven't heard that, I almost played Words at the...
That was my cover choice.
Is that right?
So, that would have been very cool, yeah.
But anyway, that's two examples for me. How about you guys? You get come up with any?
Something that kind of works. You have anything that fits what he's saying?
After BJ started talking, right, I thought of something. Okay. So the one I'm going to say was, and it's weird to me because I love this record so much now, is the third Sebadoh album, Sebadoh 3. The first two, I always thought Sebadoh was going to be Lou's weird homemade stuff that sounded like he recorded on a broken Sears tape recorder, and it was the balance to all the Jamascus loud guitars and Dinosaur and all that. And the first two albums, The Freed Man and Weed Forest, and were those, right? They were made by Lou in his bedroom, very lo-fi, anything that came to his head. And the third album came out, and it was much more a band, right? They had turned the corner to be a band, and I did not like it. And I actually got a promo of it from Homestead Vinyl and gave it away to the Bish. And I begged him many times to give it back to me, but he's like, there's no way you're getting that back. But from The Freed Pig right on down, it's just an incredible record. I mean, one of the greatest revenge songs, right? Or enemy poison letter songs, The Freed Pig, Lou getting away from Jamascus. And of course, now they're friends, so maybe this fits the theme. I also remember really disliking REM's Document when it came out. And I'm not sure if I just felt like this is going to be the inevitable. The words are getting clearer. They're getting more popular. Like, it's over now. And I can't say I love it, or it's not my favorite REM album, but I do very much like it a lot more than I did when I originally heard it. So those are probably the two that come to my mind. It's a punch out as I'm sitting next to an REM book.
REM book.
Not my time yet.
No.
But them are fighting words.
But I did come back around to really like that album and respect it.
I think that's a good example, right? I think that fits. The only thing I could think of, this isn't exactly what you're asking, because I wouldn't say this is one of my favorite records now, but it's a record that I feel bad for not liking at the time in a very public way. So when I was in college and trying very poorly to be a rock critic for the school paper at like 19 years old or something like that, I reviewed the Bangles' Different Light. And I like totally panned it. And Craig Rosen, who's sitting over here, might know something about learning how to review things. I never got very good at it. But I kind of had this feeling like, to get people to pay attention to your writing, you got to go like one extreme or the other.
Right.
So I gave it this like scathing, horrible review. Right. And then many, many years later, and that's the album with Walk Like an Egyptian, which is still not so great. But many years later, I gave the album another shot. And it's a really good record.
Mm.
Yes. Bangles, Different Light? What do you think?
That's a good example.
All right.
And the examples that aren't good examples would be stuff that you didn't quite get into when, you know, at some point in your life, and then come, as you've gotten older, come to realize that it's brilliant work.
Right.
So this is, I'm trying to think of even more examples of this.
And it's interesting, this topic, too, you know, kind of based on what Jim was saying and a little bit from what I was saying, the perception around the group at the time, the public perception, oftentimes has a lot to do with a new release, you know. And back when I was younger, it was like, well, what are my friends going to think of this if I actually like this record? You know, I have to be really careful and have to play it politically just right so I don't, you know, make anybody upset or start a fight or anything like that.
That's right. You know, and like the Missing Persons record, production value and so on can also play effect.
Yep.
And that has pretty dated production from like 1981. Mm. It says 1981 all over it, just the way it sounds,
yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
Whereas I suppose you can say the same thing for the Archers of Loaf record too, that it sounds like 1998 or whatever. And that does have an effect to how you, especially someone who critically listens to music, as to how you perceive the record.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, well produced or not well produced or dated production.
Yeah, that too.
So, and then, you know, sometimes you just grow into it. It just takes a while to feel it out.
I'm just going to ask for a show of hands here. How many people at first listen hated that Demolition Means Progress album, but have come around to really like it, right? Just gets,
you know. You mean you played it?
Oh, yeah.
So you're the three listens? No. The thing about music is that, and art in general, is that majority of people, no matter what, are going to dislike it, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To have something that's universally accepted is impossible, just because there's so many people in the world and so many. It's totally fine to dislike something and then grow to appreciate it more.
Absolutely.
If anyone out there, all budding musicians out there, or even experienced ones, if you release music and think that everyone's going to like it, you're being unrealistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
More people are going to dislike it than not.
You got to have thick skin, right? And and kind of what I was saying, with the technology today, much easier for that snide 19-year-old to just, you know, send out a diss tweet, right?
Right.
Than to write like a whole review, get it published in the college paper. Yeah.
Another thing that you can tell, just going back through my own memories, that you can tell that a record that you think you've wasted your money on or you really don't like is going to come around to bite you, is you will have an earworm from that record in your head for a long time afterwards, even if you can't stand it. And that might be the sign that you're not giving it the proper attention. So, because that happens to me all the time, where I get earworms and they'll stick around for a week or, you know, definitely more than a day. Otherwise, it's not necessarily an earworm. So, anyway.
And with that.
All right, people, call in with your own examples.
Yeah, please do. You can
shout through the window.
You can call a number.
It's a 612.
612-440-1984.
Thank you.
Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. All those at suburbspod. Thanks, BJ. Thanks very
much.
Thanks for coming down from Minnesota.
Yep.
Lead off hitter, BJ.
Yeah, the Twins could sign him.
Yes.
Okay. And we'll talk to you all tomorrow. Wait, what is the number?